Okay. All right. Let's get this party started.
Commissioner Snappa.
Present.
Commissioner Geary.
Here.
Commissioner Anderson.
Here.
Commissioner Blackburn.
Here.
Commissioner Taggart.
Right here.
And Supervisor Perez.
All right, next is the approval of the summary of proceedings for the May 15th meeting.
Which part is getting less good to me unless you pass it?
I see.
Okay, so do I have a motion? Do you have a motion?
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor? Any opposed? All right. Okay. All right, next we go to our consent agenda. We had one email concerning animal control. We need to receive and file.
Receive and file.
Okay, so can I have a motion, please?
I make a motion to receive and file.
Second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. All right, on to item D, public presentations. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons to address the commission on any matter that is not on this agenda, but under the jurisdiction of the commission. Commissioners may respond briefly to statements made or questions posed. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff for factual information, or request staff to report back to the commission at a later meeting. Also, the commission may act to direct the staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation. Speakers are limited to 2 minutes and you will come up to the podium. And before we get going, if I could just remind everybody to please turn their phones down or off. Thank you. All right. Your new business. Okay, Joan, do you have anything?
No, but I'm wondering about Liz. I haven't seen her in a while.
They're on their way, so. Next table? Anybody? Two?
You know I'm coming up.
Of course.
I should throw you all off and not do it with
you. Let me, does she have a fever?
Okay, first thing, you know I'm up here to talk about see if the
name and address.
Susan Richardson, 19 feet 06. See if there's been any discussion with anybody amongst yourselves or supervisors about the ringworm situation that comes up occasionally. That's my first order of business.
No, I have not had any conversations with the Board of Supervisors about ringworm, no.
I forgot. You want to start over?
Sally.
No, I have not had any conversations with anybody at the board about ringworm.
Any tentative discussions that you foresee in the future to start addressing how we're going to do this in terms of having it no kill, other than having me be the one to treat them at their house?
Yes, I know that we addressed this before. I do not have a solution to quarantine ringworm animals and dogs in the shelter. We rely almost entirely on foster, as you well know. And like I said before, there are perfectly healthy, perfectly adjustable, perfectly sociable dogs that are still being put down. So trying to prioritize things, and if I can solve the problem of perfectly healthy, sociable animals making it out alive, then maybe we can get to the point of quarantining ringworm animals. It's always something that we think about, discuss. I've talked to Dr. Wilson about it recently, about how many cases she's seeing, if it's going up or going down. It hasn't fluctuated much. We haven't seen one for quite some time.
And my other concern, and I know this kind of goes to the ordinance a little bit, is, and I'm going to give you an example. You know, with we've talked before about people that do stuff, we see them do things and stuff like that. And I'm going to give you an example of something I experienced. I personally saw a man grab his dog, drag it, kick it 2 times while he was dragging it into the backyard. And yet the perception I'm getting or information I'm getting back, like it doesn't mean, what's the point of me reporting? And this is what I hear a lot in the community as well. What's the point in reporting if nothing's going to be done? I mean, because I don't know about anybody else, but you know, I mean, I'm not afraid of court, okay? Because I spent a lot of time in court when I was a CPS, so, and have testified many times. So I guess my question is, if I report something like that, I mean, in reality, because I know we talked before about the ordinances and some of the laws that we've put in them, is it worth it to report it? Is it, you know, is there something else to report this guy to?
So the answer to your question, is it worth it? Yes. Is something always going to be done about it? No. It depends on whether or not there's some sort of proof that an injury has occurred, or proof that outside of your own word that did occur, that we can hold them accountable for and then call on you as a witness. It's tough when it's one person's word against another that something did or did not happen.
Okay, well, why could you not do something in terms of, and you say if it went to court, and if I'm called as a witness, saying that, yeah, this is what I saw on this date at this time.
Yes, sir. What you're kind of talking about is like a two-party or two-party citation, sort of like a citizen's arrest.
Okay.
We don't really do that for animal control. We're not law enforcement.
Okay.
But there's times when you should report that to us. I think of quite a few where we had a report of somebody allegedly kicking their dog or abusing their dog, and we go out and pay the animal a visit, and there's visible signs of that animal being injured, and at that point, some enforcement will occur. And at the very least, even if the animal is perfectly healthy when we're there, there's always other issues that probably need to be addressed. So yes, please report it.
Okay.
So I have a quick question.
Thank you.
So if she wanted to do a citizen's arrest and she called the sheriff's department, would they just kick it back to you?
I can't speak what the sheriff's department does. I'm not sure how the court system currently handles.
If it's a misdemeanor the officer has to witness it.
Okay. Isn't that for it to be a felony?
No.
Or
on a felony, you can do a citizen's arrest. On a misdemeanor, with the officer's assistance, don't go out and start arresting felons.
Yeah, that much I know.
But yeah, if it's a misdemeanor versus either a felony or a citation infraction, the officer has to see it. He has to be present to see it. If you continuously report somebody, you may build up enough evidence for them to open an investigation of some kind. I can't speak to that because, again, that would be a animal control policy or sheriff's policy decision.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Last question. How many dogs and cats are being put down average on ringworm a year from the shelter?
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know dogs is probably somewhere between 4 and 6 maybe a year.
A year?
Yes.
We
see ringworm in cats much more often. That doesn't mean it doesn't occur in dogs much more often. We just see it in cats more often because it's a smaller animal. It gets blacklighted easier. It's transmitted usually between cats a little bit easier, so it's more common for us to see it in cats. We don't typically see it in dogs. And most of the time, unless you have some reason to believe the animal has ringworm, you're going to blacklight the animal to see. Not every animal is going to be checked for ringworm unless it has some lesion that may lead us to believe that maybe it does have ringworm, and that happens more commonly in cats. So,
and you don't have an estimate of how many you put down a year or a month or anything like that on cats?
I don't. I couldn't even guess.
And you guys don't track that?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
I just don't have it in front of me.
Okay.
I can certainly come back with that.
Can you bring it back next month to us?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
but we're talking about cats, correct?
Yeah, because you already said dogs.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Nick. Okay, we'll finish up on table 2 and then move back to table 1.
Oh, no, sorry.
Nothing? Okay. Anybody else on table 1 need to? We're under public presentations right now.
We just got here. Go ahead.
Okay. All right, table 3. Liz? Okay, moving on down. Table 3? Table 4? Moving on down. Danny, anybody? All right, you guys in the back? Anybody have public presentations?
No.
Okay, all right. Then I guess that concludes public presentations. Thank you. All righty, on to staff announcements and reports. Director Cohen, you're up.
Good evening, Nick Cohen. Before this at all, I know you're fostering a lot. Is there anything else we can do?
Get more fosters.
Just get more fosters in there. All right. Other than that, like I said, the numbers look strong. So that's all the questions I've got. Thank you.
Anybody else?
How many foster families do you have? Do you have any idea?
At any given time, it's usually about 70. But that number, if you would ask me during the cold months when it's not busy, I would tell you 72, because we usually have foster families that are just on the books to be foster families, but not all of them are always able to take animals at that given time. So, and some foster families are able to take cats, some dogs, some injured dogs, some ringworm dogs.
Litters?
Do fosters take them? Absolutely. But they're, you know, some certain fosters will, some won't. So I can say there's about 70 foster families, but they all take different pieces of the pie.
Let's put an ad on TV.
It's easier said than done.
I know.
We'll have another PSA made.
I like that PSA.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if the county is going to be assisting boxers and bullies with vouchers at the at their vaccination.
Yeah, we were in conversation with the BBB about it. We didn't have anything scheduled for that day, so we have to bring staff in and work overtime. And Sally's trying to convince some people to come in and work that clinic. So right now, I can say maybe. I can't confirm it.
Anything, Karen?
No.
Okay. I'm just waiting for you to get over $100,000 on that volunteer number.
Oh, that what you waiting for?
We're close.
I have a question about the fostering.
Can you identify yourself, please?
I'm sorry?
Can you identify yourself, your name and address?
Yeah, Eustace. And I just was curious if the numbers for euthanizing really young animals that are too young to be there, is it hard to find fosters because they need to be bottle fed, or is it, or are they past that point in age but they're still too young? I'm just curious if it's a bottle feed, you know, because bottle feeding it is a lot harder of a job for fosters and stuff like that to take on that responsibility to bottle feed a litter of puppies. So I was just kind of curious if that was one of the problems with finding fosters and stuff for the younger ones.
So yes, the majority of the underage kids we put down are usually under 3 weeks of age.
Okay.
Bottle babies. The reason why we have a nursery at the facility is to try to make a dent in the 3 to 6 week old gap. So we'll see what the nursery does at the end of the year. But yeah, the large majority of cats that we don't put down too many cats. The large majority of them are too young, and a large majority of those too young are because they're under 3 weeks of age and need to be bottle fed. And if they're not under 3 weeks of age, it's usually because they're just incredibly sick with upper respiratory.
Thank you.
Liz?
Hi, Liz
Kirsten,
identify yourself, please, ma'am.
Yeah, Liz Keough, 5th Supervisorial District. One of the numbers that we've had all along that I just never remembered to ask about, or to put it in this way, have you looked into how we can decrease adoption return? Have you analyzed the reasons people are bringing these animals back? Have we looked at, is it at the front end where, I mean, it's very nice to adopt 111 animals in one day, but if 90 of them are going to come back, that ain't so good. Have we looked at that aspect of the program at all?
Yeah, so actually somebody asked me about that recently. We almost consistently every year, well, since we've been at Fruitvale, so we usually manage somewhere between 3% and 5% rate of return on adoptions. It's not anything crazy, especially when we're dealing with perfectly healthy animals that are still being put down. But the overwhelming majority of the ones that come back are behavioral reasons. So we've always known that not only for adoption returns, but for surrendered animals, if we had some ability to offer them some resources to help that animal stay in the home, then that would probably reduce that number of adoption returns. Now, the other thing that we're trying to do, which the Best Friends Academy kind of plays into, is trying to create the socialization programs in the shelter to increase their sort of ability to retain in a home after they leave. You know, they have a little bit more, and it's tough because on average dogs are with us for 7 days. So even if you're creating programs to help them socialize with other animals. We don't have them for too long to do that. But yeah, that's part of the reason why we're trying to create these play groups and socialize dogs so that when they do get adopted, they're of higher likelihood that they'll stay in that home.
One of the things I noticed, and it was a while back, I was there for I think 1 or 2 days, in terms of the folks coming in to do surrenders, is the, and Andrew, whoever told me, 99% of the reasons is I'm moving. And they were not at all amenable to even listening to options or, you know, answering questions about, well, have you checked? You know, it was just, here, I'm moving. Do you run into, have you talked to the adopt return folks? And do they have the same just stonewall attitude? I'm bringing this dog back and I don't want to hear it. Or do they appear amenable to having some discussion about the resources you're talking about?
So there's a few things there. It is not accurate to say 99% of dogs that are surrendered are because they're moving. I haven't looked at the numbers for quite some time, but it was usually somewhere around 30 to 35% being surrendered because they're moving, another 15, 20, 30% that were behavioral, and then some, you know, bites or too aggressive, or I had a child or something like that. It's not 99%, that's for sure. But your experience with watching surrenders happen, the process has completely changed. Surrendered dogs and cats are on a space basis. So if people come in and they intend to surrender their dog, they are told to come back, A, after they receive a vaccination, and B, when we have space to accept the animal. So it is not categorically, I'll take your dog.
Do they come back?
Yes. Not all the time, but 30% of the time. Now, I will say that the folks that adopt animals are usually more amenable to some sort of resource to help them keep the animal in the home than somebody who's already made that decision to come down and surrender that dog.
Thank you.
Mine's kind of piggybacking on what Liz was talking about.
Can you identify yourself, please?
Sorry, Sunday Martino. Mine's kind of piggybacking on what Liz is talking about, too. It is a hard thing that, you know, with us as a rescue, people come to us all the time, too. So they're trying to not take the dog to the shelter. They're trying to, you know, kind of keep it out of there and rehome it through us. So we do work with owner surrenders a lot. But because we don't have, I would like to know how you're getting all those fosters, because I have like 3. So it makes it
most of them are staff members.
Yeah, right. I get that. But we do have a hard time. You know, we just can't take all these dogs in. So we work with the person. We're like, okay, so the first thing is, are you open to training? Of course, nobody has money for training. They don't want to do that. Okay, well, we try to look for other ways to keep the dog, get them, if they need a crate, you know, and try to walk them through the process, we do that too. But a lot of them are owner surrenders. And for us, I'm going to say half of them are because they're moving and they can't take the dog with them. And being a breed-specific rescue, being a pit bull, ours are going to be, the numbers are going to be, you know, different than what, or your reasons are going to be different. But it is a tough thing.
Glad to know we're not alone.
Those dogs, yeah. And then my other thing is also, so for this weekend, I wanted to offer it to anybody else in here, too. And just real quick, I wanted to see, let's just see what I think it is. Oh, it is Josh. Okay. I just want to make note, this guy right here is really awesome. So I'm glad to see he's in here. Anyways, if anybody has something that you'd like to bring to this clinic on Saturday, feel free to do that, whether it's information on taking better care of your animals. You know, I really would love to have you there, Nick, too, with the vouchers. If not, we can maybe find another way to kind of get vouchers to them, because we are going to be at the courthouse in Wasco, and I'm really hoping to have at least 500 dogs come through, because like you said, I need these vaccinations on the refrigerator so I can have food again. And I think it's going to be a great opportunity to educate the Wasco area, and that's something I think has been, you know, it's out in the middle of nowhere, not a whole lot of people, they don't have a lot of resources out there, so I think it'd be a great opportunity. So make sure it's open up to everybody.
Thank you. Anybody else?
All right. Nick, I'm just curious, when somebody owner surrenders,
for whatever reason, they fill out an information form.
Yes.
So it'll help with the adoption, future adoption possibly.
Yeah, I mean, we always ask the reason for the surrender, try to get some assumption of, or assertion of the behavior of the animal. But yeah, we always have an idea of why the animal surrendered in the first place. And every now and then I'll pull those numbers to see. It's remarkably consistent, usually.
Thank you.
There's not a lot of pet-friendly housing in Kern County.
No, there isn't. Cassandra, Petco.
So on the two young that are being put down, now I know we've got you've got the nursery now, right? And there's a second area for the nursery that's not up and running at this point. Correct, there's two parts of the nursery, because when I did the walk, they had the one part of the nursery up and running, had all the stuff, and they said the second part where the kittens would be needed like heating pads or different things like that. Is that correct?
Correct.
But it's not heating pads, it's mostly staffing.
Okay, so, it's mostly staffing?
One room is open, yeah.
Okay, so there's, and how much does each room hold on the cats?
So each room has 9 cages, so it just depends on how many are in the litter, at what capacity that.
25.
Yeah, depending.
Okay, so the other one is not running because it's short-staffed, but if it was staffed, then that would be less cats that you would be having put down for being too young?
Yes.
Yes, but we're not euthanizing kittens that could potentially go into that room. The nursery has criteria of admittance. So what we're talking about in statistics are, you know, 0 to 3-week-old kittens, and to go into the nursery, they have to be above 3 weeks, eating on their own, and relatively healthy. So we can't stack bottle babies into
those
that room.
The ones that are under 3 weeks of age, they need round the clock care.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that are going to be put down?
Mm-hmm.
The majority of them, yes.
Okay, and then as far as reaching out to the public, besides just coming into the shelter, how do people know to become a foster?
Social media, our website, just about any opportunity they get on TV, they can leave for fosters.
Okay.
And anytime somebody comes in to adopt, we ask them to foster.
Okay.
All good? All right. Let's get a motion to receive and file, and then we'll move on to the next item.
I make a motion.
Okay. All in favor? Any opposed? All right. Don't go far. All right. Next, number two. Ordinance. Subcommittee.
We had our 8th or 10th or 12th meeting of the
75th.
Subcommittee, Animal Services Commission Subcommittee today. We made good progress today, more than I would say in quite some time. Jerry and Council had told us last meeting that she didn't see a problem if we wanted to kind of take what was already agreed upon and start developing a proposal to the Commission to see if that would be adopted and sent to the Board. So we came to an agreement on some of the more common ground issues, so we're going to move forward with that. There's still, you know, a pretty divisive topic that we need to come to an agreement on, so, or not. So, she doesn't know it, but I'll be working with council on some of the language and legality of what we kind of came to an agreement on, and then we'll just start from there. Eventually, you'll have something for you.
Oh boy. Okay. Thank you. That's it for that. Okay. Do I have a motion to receive and file?
I'll make a motion.
Okay. All in favor? Any opposed? All right. Next, Bay Neuter funds update. Thank you, Nick.
Blake, can we make sure that mic is working? Will you make sure that's working?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, so my name is Mike Smith. I am the business manager for Kern County Animal Services. I am tracking how we're doing on spay neuter, and as you can see by the balance there on the top, we're at -$17,000. That's a good sign. That means because we have to complete the trust fund of $30,000, so we're well over halfway to getting spending the $250,000 plus the $30,000 in the trust fund, I have another good news, and that's that we applied for a food and ag grant, and we got, I applied for $50,000, and the number they gave me is so off the wall I can never remember it. It's something like
$46,275.
Yeah, something like that. You know, keep that straight in your head and see how that goes. But so they couldn't, you know, so it was less than that. But and that's going into the Save the Pities program. We want to expand the Save the Pities program countywide. We want to have those vouchers given out everywhere that vouchers are being given out, so we want to expand that. And that's the goal, and we're going to be running some ads in the very near future. I've got to get those up and running. And so that's where we are with spay neuter. We also got another food and ag grant. You see the one down there for $15,000. They didn't give us $15,000 this year. They gave us $7,500. That money is going to go to Taft, actually, is the plan, so that we can have clinics in Taft. The biggest growth in by zip code of where we've had the most growth in voucher use is the Kern River Valley. And there's a rescue group up there who's doing all the dirty work for us, and they've gotten funding.
SOS Rescue.
Yes, SOS Rescue. They've gone out and gotten extra funding to help. They're using their funding plus the vouchers. So you know, it's been, and they're reaching people that, you know, where last year, you know, little podunk places up there in the Kern River Valley where there was one voucher up there, now there's 12. So they're out there reaching the people that are, it's extremely difficult for us to reach. So really appreciate the work they're doing.
Just to clarify on that before you go, Susan, Liz, and for everybody's knowledge, that $46,239.16, that's the license plate.
I know.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the things I was going to ask Blake today, because that was due March 31st or something.
Mm-hmm. So if anybody's not aware, what seems like 25 years ago, the state of California started selling spay-neuter license plates. And the goal at the time was that a portion of those license plate revenue was going to go towards spay and neuter in the state of California. For some reason, they waited like 20 years to figure out how they're going to disperse it. But it was a grant process. Yeah. So that's where that money comes from.
Well, my pitch was, I've paid for the license plate for a number of years. I want the money back in my...
No, it's going to be used. You can't have it back.
No, to the funding agency. Nice. I've been paying. I want it back in my county, so I'm delighted.
So 46, whatever it is...
That's great.
Is coming to Kern County, and we're going to see if we can... we're attacking... Our two biggest problems are kittens, less than 3 weeks of age, and big dogs. And so that's what we're targeting with this extra funding, is spay and neuter for the big dogs so that we can get to the point where there's fewer litters. And that's the goal.
Great. All right, let's go with Commissioner's question.
I have a question, just a clarification. When you said you're starting the piggy program countywide, does that include city residents, or
no,
do they still have to be county residents?
They still have to be county residents, but there are other places, we've kept it in the metro county area. And we have, like Fraser Park, the Family Resource Center up there does vouchers, but we haven't given them Save the Pity vouchers to use. We're going to change that. Same thing with Cotton Willow and their Family Resource Center. We're going to get these vouchers out there.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Neil?
So you were saying the majority of vouchers that you've given out this year have been in the Kern River Valley?
No, that's where the biggest growth has been.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so the majority of the vouchers are still coming from 93306, 78, Lamont. That's where probably
61%.
55%, 55% of the vouchers come from there.
Okay.
I was just curious, when you were talking about expanding the Save the Pigs, if it was going to include the county residents in Ridgecrest.
So I'm sure it will. We haven't talked with the shelter out there who issues our vouchers, but yeah, I mean, we are going to. If they're willing to issue the vouchers, we will be willing to give them to them.
Okay. Question on the license plate. Is this a one-time thing, or will there be additional opportunities to dip into that fund?
I honestly don't know the answer to that. So if it took them 10 years to issue it, you know, it's making me wonder if they're giving it all out this year. I don't know.
Well, now, did you apply for it, or they just sent it to us?
No, we had to apply for it.
Okay.
I applied for a grant, and like Liz said, it had to be done by the 31st.
Okay.
For the first time, you know, when we get the $15,000, I don't have to do a contract. I don't have to do a report. This larger amount of money, they sent me a state contract. It's going to go to the board at the next board date. I have to get that in, and then I'm going to have to submit an annual report at the end of it. And if we don't spend all of that $46,285.15, we're going to have to give some of it back. So we don't want
to
do that.
By golly, we've got to spend that.
Okay. Yes.
Commissioner, my understanding is, because I was in touch with Judy Mancuso when this whole thing started, and it was a different organization than Social Compassion.
Yeah, it was.
They thought that they could get the bureaucracy going here, there, and all that. And then it turned out California Veterinary Medical Association got involved and all kinds of stuff. But I have one of those plates, and there are a whole bunch of people in this town that do. We pay our license fees every single year. So this is going to be funded much like the, you know, the license, 10% of the license fees that go to spay neuter. It will, now they've had all this accumulation up to this point. So it's probably up here, and with the ongoing renewals, the ongoing amount will probably decrease, but my understanding is this will go on forever.
Well, and ultimately, if they have to apply for it, not all jurisdictions may apply for it, which leaves money available. So
right.
That's kind of what I wanted to know.
Okay, thank you, Blake.
One of the big things for getting that either the $15,000 that we've gotten in the past or the $7,500 that we got this year is that the city or the jurisdiction has to provide their spay neuter and licensing and rabies numbers to the county so that we can submit it to the report. And the only, there isn't a single city out there that provides us the information. We include county information, and we include Tehachapi and Arvin because we already have that information. But if every city out there, Shafter, Wasco, every little city out there, if they would just submit to us their numbers, that would make them eligible for probably a $7,500 grant that they could put every year towards spay and neuter. And so if you talk to some of these city officials, it doesn't take that much to get us your numbers and then be eligible for a grant. So.
But they have to give their numbers to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And Bakersfield City doesn't submit them. They're, like I said, the only jurisdictions that no one submits them to us. We just submit what we already have. And Director Cohen sends an email or a notification out to every single city person saying, okay, it's that time of year, give us your numbers, and we get a zero response. So.
Wow.
Interesting. Anything else?
I think that's it. Thank you, Blake. Do I have a motion to receive and file?
I'll make a motion.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay.
On to item F, Commissioner announcements or reports. Start at the end of the table?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, we're not there yet.
Like Nick said, the subcommittee is moving right along. It's a slow process at first, but at least we're getting something out to Jerry, and we do have a lot more to do, so we'll be meeting for a while.
and Central California Animal Disaster Team will be holding two training sessions for staff for County Animal Services tomorrow. So that's kind of nice because get them out, more training is better, and it's on responding, and it's during disasters. So it should be good. And that's all.
All right, thank you. Yeah. All right. All right, I got nothing. So that concludes Commissioner announcements and reports. G, old business, we have none. All right, we're on to new business, and I give you the floor, Commissioner Black.
Great. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce Cassandra Warnhardt here tonight. I've been talking about her the last 3 months, and I think she's a dynamic person, and all you have to do is talk to her for about 5 minutes, and you get as excited as she is about a positive attitude in helping animals. I met her about 4 months ago, and I've been trading with the store on Rosedale because it's closer to my home, and one day I thought I'd go in there and just introduce myself or just meet the manager, and then when I met her, I thought, wow, she's got it going, and I talk about her at every meeting, and she is the real deal, and I was able to get her here tonight, and I'm really glad. While she's making her way up to the podium, I want you to take this with you, too. You may want to talk about this. One of the things that really that impressed me was the first time I was in there, there was this one little cat that was in the cubby. His cat's name was Olive. Olive had been there by herself like 3 weeks because she was by herself for 3 weeks. And because they hadn't had a regular replenishment of animals, she was there by herself, and they brought some other animals in like a few days later, and they inadvertently picked Olive up and brought her back to Animal Services. Cassandra called me, she goes, I want that cat back. I don't want that cat put down. So I went down to visit with Sally and said, hey, Cassandra wants the cat back. She thinks she wants to try to place it. So they brought Olive back down to Petco. It stayed there another two, maybe 3 weeks. And she worked on the social skills and everything, and she got it placed. She sent me a text photo of the new parents, and it was a great day to see that cat finally get adopted. And so that's a wonderful story. Another one that I'll let her finish the, I'm not really sure how it went down, is there was a kitten that was brought in there, I think, inadvertently. The person that brought the cat in said, oh, you know, that's a feral cat. Oh,
yeah,
I should have brought
cat, yeah.
They said, oh, that's a feral cat. We weren't supposed to bring this one down. She goes, no, I'm going to try and work with this cat. And so I'm going to just let me work with it. And so I'm not sure how long she worked with it, but I think it was a positive outcome. But anyway, I wanted to introduce Cassandra to everybody, and I'm glad that you're here. So welcome, and I'll let you take it from here.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much. So, yeah, it's pretty cool that Gary came in and introduced himself. He actually got a lot of things rolling and getting me connected with Nick, because I hadn't met Nick yet. And so with the feral cat that came in, Jeff had brought the cat in with a helper. They tried to get the cat out, and I'm on the register, and I see that they're walking out the door with the cat in the container. And I said, whoa, where are you going with the cat? And he said, we can't get this cat out of the box. It's too feral. I said, give me the cat. I said, the tougher the better. We'll work with this cat. So I get this cat over there, and I'm like trying to get it out, and it's not getting out. But I finally get it out. I get everything else out of there, get it in the cage, and got everything in there. And I noted when they said, well, it strikes, hisses, whatever. So when I put my hand in there, The strike at me wasn't to hurt me, it was to say, I'm scared. So you kind of know a difference between that. So I told all my workers, I said, okay, it was a Thursday, I'm going to be gone for the weekend, you guys need to work with this cat. Came back Monday, because it takes whole staff. Came back Monday, that cat was talking, meowing, purring, and being held. So within that week after that, we got that cat adopted. Perfect. So, yeah, and here this cat was going to be, because they couldn't get out, I'm like, no, trust me, we'll take it. And then another one was William. William was with me about 6 weeks.
The orange cat.
The orange cat, and the picture of him, he's just terrified of life. It took about 6 weeks, and the family that took William also took another cat with them, took both. And, William was up there then at the front of it. sticking its head out, just being loved. So that was another one. And of course, you know, Gary likes a bunch of cats.
Well, my next cat would be an orange cat. Every time an orange cat comes in, she says, hey, I got an orange cat down here for you.
Yeah. So, we're very fortunate to have the cats there. One of the things, like when we do the adoption there, we did have it at 20. We've increased it to 30. So now we're getting an extra $10, which is fantastic. Also, they're able to get a welcome to the family booklet, which has like free food, free litter, and everything else. So they're getting kind of an extra something when they're adopting as well. Plus, you guys offer that free vet check. So that's pretty cool. Last year, we did 160 adoptions just out of our location.
Wow.
And now that we're getting more cats, last month was 14, and that should continue to grow. I know since 2014, Petco, working with Kern County Animal Shelter, has donated over $300,000. So that is a huge amount, plus the nursery as well, and we want to continue growing and doing that kind of business and supporting the shelter here locally. Let's see, as far as what we're doing now as well is with the Finding Foster Cares, because I went down and had the pleasure of viewing the whole facility and finding out about the need of foster cares. So as we get the cats adopted out, we're also giving them the flyer for the foster care, because they obviously have a heart that they're wanting to adopt. So now we're going, okay, well, here's a, have a little bigger heart. Foster some. So yeah, it's a really good relationship. I am very honored to be a partner with you guys and continue. And I'm thank you for inviting me. This is the first meeting, so this won't be the last meeting. You will see my face here, because it is a relationship that I want to continue to grow with. So thank you.
Can you talk about the events that
sure,
just for a minute, so everybody knows about them?
Okay, so the adoption event. So we have several adoption events. Some of the adoption events are actually where the you guys could make a lot more money.
Explain that a little bit more, because I didn't know the numbers.
Let me go over here and look at that. Let's see. We have a second page on that. Let's see the other page.
I don't think I have all of those there.
Okay. So so basically, when we have certain adoption events, it is the ones where money can be made if where Petco pays extra money with X amount of animals being adopted. Dog, cat, and even rabbit. So if you wind up getting five of them out for those events, like we had one July 13th and 14th. So I know usually we can get one person over there, right? If you get five out, is it an extra 25 or was it 50?
I think you said 50, but I could be wrong.
I don't have the paper here.
Okay.
But it's extra money besides the money that we get from the adoption fee. So they do need volunteers to show up, I guess, on Sunday to mandate it. I actually build in the inside where it's nice and air conditioned for you guys. If anybody wants to volunteer on Sunday and go pick up the dogs over there at the shelter and help with the adoption, it gets more money. So it's piled on. And then after X amount of dogs, you can get $75 per adoption. And I don't have to have that number in front of me. But it's you, then they give an extra $75, but it's special events that we have those about four times. And of course, I spoke to them about it and given them the dates. And so if we get volunteers, they can show up and then support that with getting more animals adopted. So that's something else Petco does, is get more money into your guys' pocket that way.
Fantastic.
Oh, he wants me to talk about the artificial free, so.
This is big.
Artificial free as a company, we believe what's best for the pet. Kind of where you guys are, right? Trying to do what's right by the animal. So as a company, we actually went to artificial free as in all of our stores. We took all the Friskies, all that other stuff that had artificial coloring dyes out of our stores and said, if we're doing what's right for the pet, then why are we selling what's wrong for the pet? So as the new CEO says, get it out of our stores.
Out of Petco?
Out of Petco.
Yay!
It made sense. So at first we thought, okay, this is gonna hit the bottom line, right? What we found out is that people were so happy that we were actually willing to do the right thing and do that, that our actually it's better for the business even. We're like, okay, that's good. Cool. And also we have made companies, if they wanna be in our stores, they have to change the nutrition in their food. And so like Friskies, we have very limited. It's the naturals, because we won't carry the other.
Good.
So yeah, that's what the company did, took a stance in that. And so that's different than any other food companies out there. Yeah.
How long ago has that happened?
We finished removing everything in May.
In May, so this is hot off the press.
Yeah, yeah, we've been in the process of doing it, and then finally it's completely out. So if there was something that was slipped in and someone comes up there and tries to ring it, our registers won't even ring it. And so if it shows up and says we can't sell it, then I'll just be like, okay, I don't know how it got somehow in the store, I just give it to the person because we don't sell it.
Yeah.
We won't sell it and won't carry it. So that's kind of cool as a company. Very proud of that, to be behind that company that way. Does anybody have any questions for me?
Any questions?
No? Okay, but if you guys want to volunteer?
On Sundays. Okay.
Sending for that extra money.
Thank you very much for coming here.
Thank you.
I have to say thank you to Commissioner Blackhorse for being so fastidious about this and making it happen.
That's okay. I was happy to do it.
We appreciate it. Okay, so that just leaves us for adjournment until Wednesday, July 17th. Second? All in favor? Any opposed? All right. Have a great week, guys. Thank you.